from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Cheyenne Parker, Assistant Corporate Controller at Kohl's Company in Spokane, holds both a Zag BBA and MAC. Her journey is a testament to perseverance, determination, and mentorship, which collectively broke a non-productive cycle for both herself and her family.
Hello.
Hello, hello. We have Cheyenne Parker from Kohl's Company, and you're in the controller's office.
Tom is the controller. I am the assistant controller.
Okay, so you do all the work and Tom gets all the credit.
So I think you'd probably agree with that. I'm just kidding. I would say we're a great team.
That's awesome. Yeah, he always speaks real highly of you. Incredible company in the rich history and kind of one of the many cornerstones of Spokane. We can get to some of that later, but today, Cheyenne, I want to talk about you.
There was
an article in the paper a long time ago, kind of featuring you, and somebody had shared it with me. I was like, I know this person, and what an incredible story of perseverance and strength and belief, and I don't know, I could go on. So I want to hear about how you got to Gonzaga.
Yeah, definitely. No, thank you. Yeah, it's funny when I read the article back, it's just kind of funny to read it. It definitely gives me some time to reflect. So once you sent me that email a couple weeks ago now, I was like, give me a lot of time to just reflect on where I came from, what I'm doing now, why I'm here, what I've been through to get here. It's been great. So I grew up Spokane native, went to North Central High School, all 4 years there. As you saw in the article, pretty non-traditional upbringing. I lived with my mom most of my life. So my mom and my dad were actually never married or really even in a long-term relationship. So I spent most of my life living with my mom. I have three younger brothers. One of them has the same mother as I do. So growing up, she battled a lot of addiction problems. And so through that, you know, I definitely had to grow up pretty quick. I started working like the day I turned 16, I applied to start working, and kind of transitioned into figuring out like, can I get out of this cycle? And I think that that's a really big part of my story is that everyone's like, how did you get out? You know, cause that's when you talk to people in the community, then they're like, once you're in that life cycle, you feel stuck. And, you know, I see that. Like the people that I grew up with, there is a lot of people that are still just doing that same thing, living that same lifestyle. But I think that, you know, I had my dad's side of the family wasn't really in that. And so I had a lot of role models on that side of my family. The problem was that, you know, back in the day too, you know, it was much more like my mom had custody of me and my dad got to see me every other weekend. And that was just kind of the way it was back in the day. Whereas now I feel like that's kind of changed a lot more. You know, parents can split custody more regularly, I feel like, in today's age. But my dad didn't really have the opportunity even to get that. So I think it ended up being that I just lived with my mom and that was the lifestyle I was in most of the time. But then when I would go to my dad's side, I would see that, you know, there was more of a normal life. Like my cousins on my dad's side are about the same age as my dad. So my dad's sister is, you know, 20 years older than he is. So all of my cousins, which are more like aunts and uncles, I feel like they were really the role model that gave me like the insight inside my family that were like, okay, there is another lifestyle. You know, they all went to college. Two of them are CPAs. So I credit definitely my drive to go towards accounting to them and just watching their careers unfold when I was a young kid. And so through that, it's been just so interesting because I just wanted a different life and I was willing to work for it. And I think that that's another big thing that I have. I have a lot of drive. I knew what I wanted and I went for it. But I can say that like a big theme to this story is definitely the people that I surrounded myself with. They really allowed me to get out of the cycle per se.
So it, you know, I hear a lot of in what we're doing, and of course my focus is always accounting specific, but getting the right role models in the right places. You know, you look at some of the historically underrepresented groups in accounting, African-American being one, you know, and to see a successful Black CPA, right, could inspire, you know, the next generation of Black accountants. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like on some level, like these role models, and it wasn't CPA specific for you, but, you know, I guess being able to see that other things were possible was pretty helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it was them and my family, but then again, you know, I didn't live with my dad full time. I didn't get to see them all the time. But then it was people in the community too, you know, and that's really where I just, when I was reflecting on my whole story, I was just thinking through just the countless people that, you know, owed me nothing in perspective. And, you know, they weren't my family. They were just people that I met along the way that just were rooting for me. And I really leaned into that, and because I needed it. I mean, so when you need something like that and people are there to like lift you up and root you on when you don't have that in your corner, it's really empowering. And I saw that, you know, during high school, it was all of my teachers in high school. You know, I was very open with them with what I was going through in terms of just dealing with late nights, constant disruption at home. And, you know, just not a lot of, you know, family help. You're going through high school and you think of a typical, I mean, I wouldn't say typical, especially in Spokane, you know, there's definitely some kids that are very similar to me. But when I reflect on like going to GU and, you know, all of my friends, it definitely is not typical, I would say.
Right.
but also I can say that that's actually part of the story that makes it so great is that I was able to immerse myself in a community of people that were where I wanted to be. Like they lived the lifestyle and, you know, the family life that was connected and just loving and just offered all of that support. And, you know, now I had those role models and I got to experience so much time with my friends and their families. And now I have the opportunity to implement that in my own lifestyle. And, you know, I just feel so blessed that that's where I'm at now. And all of those people are such a big part of my life still. You know, many of my friends from Gonzaga, you know, one of them just flew up here last weekend to be here for my daughter's first birthday, and her parents drove over from the Tri-Cities to be here. So it's just funny because, you know, I don't have a typical family life, but my life is abundantly full of people that I consider my family, and, you know, and forever I'm going to have them as my support system. And it's just been great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you deserve it. Deserve all that support. You were mentioning earlier, 16, get a job. So you're in high school and you're working full time pretty much, right? Or you're working.
Yep. So
what was kind of what was the plan there? And in the article and the spokesman talked a little bit about some of that. So if you want to elaborate on your moves, what you did.
Yeah. So, right. I was going to high school, you know, freshman, sophomore year, I was, you know, participating in sports, you know, doing all the normal high school stuff. Well, then Sonic Drive-In, you know, came to Spokane, and it was the coolest place to work, right? I mean, it was the busiest Sonic Open ever they had ever had.
Oh,
in
wow.
Little Spokane, Washington. I don't know if you remember, but there was many articles in the Spokane Review about, you weren't even here actually, probably.
Well, no, so here's my memory of that. So there, prior to Sonic coming on, it's between Division and Ruby. Is that the one? I think that was.
Yeah, you're right.
There used to be over on Hamilton a Sonic burrito.
You're right.
It was delightful. And then these big corporate monsters from Sonic come in and they told Sonic Burrito, which has been there for like 20 years, that they can't use the word Sonic anymore. It was trademarked. And so they had to rename it like Ionic Burrito. Yeah. And so I was always kind of like, I'm not going to go to Sonic. But I think I've had a couple like Sundays and stuff there with my kids, but go on. Okay. It was a huge deal. Yeah. It was a huge deal, right?
Like the traffic was backed up all the way down the Vision and it was wild. And literally everyone from my high school worked there. Like it was insane. So on my 16th birthday, I went in there and I applied and I got the job and I started working there and I ended up being the longest tenured person from my high school to work there.
Wow.
I worked there for 4.5 years. So I started at 16 and I worked all the way through sophomore year at GU at Sonic Drive-In. And so part of the story in the Spokane Review was, I was working full time and it was so busy that they were like, they were letting us work whenever. And so, I mean, we were working full time, making $7.63 an hour.
Yes. Woo!
Just really raking in the cash. But no, and we were getting tipped too, which was like the other thing. So we were getting a ton of money in tips.
So were you roller skating out or roller
skating? I was one of those roller skaters. I was a diehard roller skater.
Wow. Okay.
And all my friends from Gonzaga loved it because I'd always come home after work and I'd bring home like all the leftover food that just was like left from closing. It was always this funny thing. So yeah, I worked there all through high school and into college for 2 years. And actually, so the part of the article too was that the owners, so I didn't bring them up yet, but these two people are truly like the surrogate family that is really part of my story is that everyone's my surrogate family. So Ting and Patrick Vollmer, they're the two. They're the family, the Clarence Group, who opened that Sonic Drive-In. And so they are now like, I can say, it's always funny because when I talk to people, I'm like, oh yeah, my mentors. Because I don't really know what to call these people that have like made this way into my life and like they're here to stay. So I'm, you know, 34 years old calling all these people who were, you know, these very influential adults in my life, but I'm still calling them my mentors. And really now they're like family to me, but that's the only way I really know what to call them when I'm talking to other people about them. And so Ting and Patrick own Sonic, you know, they're there, they're big believers in just, you know, making Sonic be the place that people start their career, which was always great, right? Because, you know, that was never my end goal, was not to work at Sonic. But then I ended up working there for 4.5 years. And through that, I gained relationships with Patrick and Ting and many other business people that they introduced me to. One of our big bankers I met, you know, through them, they had him come and talk to us at Sonic about just being financially, you know, smart. So it's just kind of funny. It wasn't just working at Sonic, you know, like working at McDonald's. It was truly like they were there to help the people that worked there succeed if they wanted it. And so I would go to coffee with Ting and Patrick and they would have, you know, sit down talks about what we should be doing, you know, and they really were like, you should, you know, buy your car in cash. So part of that article was, you know, I bought my first car in cash, you know, $10,000 of my roller skating money that I took out of the bank and I paid for it. I don't know. I was still in high school. So, I mean, I had been saving that money for, I don't remember. I must have done it right before we graduated, I think. So yeah, it was like, those people just really gave me a, they gave you, again, another role model in my life that were just there rooting you on. And so the story continues because, so, you know, I'm working, I'm going to high school, and I'm applying for schools, and I'm applying for scholarships one after another to try and decide what I'm going to do next without trying to go into an extreme amount of debt. So, you know, I get into UW, and I get into the business school as a freshman, which was pretty uncommon. I don't know if that's still true today.
It is very, very, it's, there's no guarantee you can get to be a business major at UW. So,
okay. Yeah. So I got in there, I got a full ride through scholarships and financial aid when you know, offered the package or whatever the case may be. And I'm like, okay, maybe I'm going to UW, and, you know, and I'm just like, I don't really know. Obviously I'm, you know, 17 years old, just trying to decide what I'm doing with my life. And then, you know, I also apply at Gonzaga. I get a ton of scholarships, over $160,000 of scholarships to go to GU.
Wow.
Which was a lot of money. And yeah. I don't know if that's a lot of money today when you consider tuition prices, but back then it was. And, you know, a couple of them were, you know, you get the package when you apply. And then I had also applied to be, I applied for the Ignatian Leadership Scholarship. So I got to do that whole, I don't know if they still do it, obviously, but I got to do this weekend up at Bozarth where you go, and I think there was 40 people and only 20 people were getting the scholarship. And so you go on this leadership weekend.
Wow.
Okay. So it sounds like they don't do that anymore.
They could very well do it. I've never heard of it, but that doesn't mean anything. There's a lot of.
Yeah, lot of no, it was honestly like a really, really cool experience. You know, and I stayed out at Bozarth for search. Also during my GU tenure. So, you know, Bozarth, it's got a special place in my heart, but that weekend I remember, and there's still people that I know that were on that weekend with me, you know, that went through that same scholarship weekend. So went through that weekend. I did end up getting that scholarship. So that was part of the $160,000 that I earned. And I'm like, okay, what do I do? Well, Ting, so owner at Sonic, she's like, you got to go at least view UW before you make a decision. And I'm like, okay, I guess you're right. So she says she's driving me over. She's driving me to UW. So we get in the car, we head over, we sit in on a few classes, accounting classes. And I'm like, whoa, I was definitely wide-eyed and immediately I knew it wasn't the place for me, which is hilarious now because it makes complete sense. Like when I look back, I'm like, that was like a fork in the road that if I would have chose UW, my trajectory would have been night and day different from what it is today, obviously.
So was it just huge class sizes?
Yep. Huge class sizes. And then, you know, from the beginning of this to now, you've already heard the story, right? My success has been rooted in the small, tight-knit community of each place that I've gone. So high school, it was the teachers that were always, you know, rooting for me. They were invested in figuring out, like, how to make sure that my non-traditional way, you know, I was missing school a lot because I was working full-time. You know, Dempsey Ortega, he was my teacher he taught business and, you know, DECA. So I did DECA with him. I was the president of the DECA store. And, you know, he really empowered me to kind of, you know, prioritize my own responsibilities, which included being, you know, the president of DECA. I was his TA. And then, you know, in my free time, he let me work on scholarships and, you know, all the things. And so it was that's just support in such a small school that you wouldn't get if I was going to a big school. And, you know, I felt that exact same thing when I got to GU. Unfortunately, my stepdad actually passed away while I was at Gonzaga. And I had to figure out what to do with my brother. So he was living with my stepdad at that time.
Oh.
And my mom was somewhere else, I think in Ellensburg, and he hadn't lived with her in a while either. So, you know, I had to go to Dr. Weber and say, hey, I need some help. Like, I don't really know where to start here. I've never dealt with this, you know.
Yeah.
He's my stepdad. My brother doesn't really have anybody else. And so I went to Dr. Weber and I was like, do you have any insight? Like, who should I call? I don't know what to do. And again, those are the type of things that happened in my, you know, my story, that it's like, if I was somewhere bigger, it's like, who would be helping? I can't really envision that really in such a, like at GU, I just feel like that's in, you know, it's inbred. It's just like, everyone is so close. The class sizes are small. You talk with your professors daily. And so it's just, and even now in my current career, right? I didn't, when all my friends left to Seattle to go work at Amazon, I stayed in Spokane and I worked for the smaller, I guess, so Moss Adams here in Spokane. And again, like, I feel like I have these relationships with the people that I worked with at Moss Adams here in Spokane that are going to be lifelong, just because of how small and connected they are.
So a couple things. Did in high school, did you move out of your house at one point once you got a job? I think.
Yeah, I did. I had moved out of my mom's house when things got pretty bad around, I think, 16. And so I moved. So right when I got that job, I think my stepdad and my mom had broken up and things were just getting pretty dicey. So I decided that, you know, if I wanted out of the chaos and, you know, to find some stability, I needed to figure out what my next move was. So I did. I moved in with my aunt for a while. I think, you know, through junior year into senior year, I lived with my aunt. And then I decided that it was time to just venture on my own. So then I ended up actually moving into a house at 507 East Cinto. So
wow.
Right in the heart of GU, pre-GU. So I moved in with a ton of people. There was like six of us that worked at Sonic Drive-In. And we moved into a house and just roller skated right to work from 507 East Cinto.
Wow, that's awesome. Wow. So, I mean, you're basically an adult early on.
Yep.
Now, you said you went to UW, too big, so you're like, Gonzaga is the place for me, right? And did you come visit campus? Did you visit classes?
I just kind of didn't. I had been on campus a few times, obviously being a Spokane native. I'm trying to remember. I may have sat in on a class or two. Yeah, I had to. I walked Jepson for sure, pre-coming. I didn't do gel weekend. I know that was like a big thing that many people did that really solidified. And I had gel babies when I was at Gonzaga. So I know how cool that weekend was, like being a part of it as a student. But no, I never did any of that. I just went for it. Just given, you know, obviously Spokane is a huge GU. Everyone loves GU. So I felt like if UW wasn't it, GU was. So I just committed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I moved into GU, into TUI. So I was like, also, I'm applying for it. So back then, TUI was brand new.
Yeah.
And it was the leadership dorm. So I was like, I'm applying. You had to apply. And, you know, I had never even lived anywhere that nice. So I was like, I'm applying to live in that really nice dorm because I want all new stuff.
Yeah. Heck yes.
I got in there and lived there for 2 years. So my freshman and sophomore years, I lived at TUI. And yep, I moved right from 507, packed up all my stuff and drove down the road to TUI and moved in.
Wow. Now this is how bad I am. I'm trying to figure out, is TUI, is that the one that's right next to
Ultimate Bagel?
Okay, perfect. So in an ironic twist, I was the last person to live at it was actually a house that they chopped up into apartments, but the university owned it on that location. David's Pizza used to be right next door where that There's
that. I know.
That
I remember.
Yeah, that was an awesome location. It was like an old gas station that they converted, but it was kind of the go-to. But yeah, wow. And so you got the new dorm. You're living the good life now. It's like things are on the upswing. Okay, so you're 2E as a freshman. Did you stay there sophomore year?
I did, yep.
Okay, at what point do you decide to be a business major and or accounting major?
So I had already decided. So like okay. I had said, so my cousins were like, I basically was like, I have to be accounting. So you saw in that article, that's actually my favorite part of that article is at the end of it, except they messed up my name. But at the very end of it, they say, don't be surprised if in 4 years you see Cheyenne, I think they said, you see Williams, but they meant Bright, as an accountant in the Spokane area or something like that. Yeah. And here I am. It was true. I did it.
So, okay. So you were pretty focused. You dived right in. Did you double major accounting and finance or?
I did not. Nope. With, okay. Again, all through college, I worked full time. So I was just heart set going to accounting and thought, in the future, if I want to do finance, I know how to get there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So, and then, excuse me. Did you stick around for a Mac?
I did. Yep.
Okay.
So stayed for the fifth year. Got my CPA during that, which was amazing.
Okay.
To get that all out of the way, just go for it.
And you still worked, right? Because after your sophomore year, you weren't working at Sonic, but did you continue to work?
I did. So yeah. So during my summer between sophomore and junior year, I ended up getting another job. So I was working Red Lobster and Sonic. So
Cash tips is what we want.
That was actually the problem is that I knew I wanted to get out of Sonic get into the server life, like the inside server life.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of friends that were doing that and they were making a lot of money and they were able to save a lot of money back then. And so I was like, okay, how do I do that? So Red Lobster, it finally opens in Spokane. So I apply during their opening team and I get hired, but they actually, so at Red Lobster, they're super corporate, wouldn't actually hire me as a server because they didn't consider Sonic serving. And so obviously you're not doing table service, but I still am a big believer that I have, the serving skills on my roller skates. If I could roller skate out some food, I could bring out some food to a table at a regular restaurant.
Right.
So they made me be, I had to be a host and then also a busser. And so I was like, well, there's no way I'm going to take a huge pay cut because at Sonic, I was making all these tips and you're like, you only make $1 or $2 per card, but you're cruising around. You're making, a lot of money at the end of the day. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just try and hold on. So I talked with the owner there at Red Lobster. Here we go again, like another person who just is part of the story. Robin was my own, was the general manager at Red Lobster. And just a couple months ago, I bought my washer and dryer for my rental from her. So we're still staying connected. All these people, all the leaders from all the places I've been are still very connected in my story. As a side note, but yeah, so working at Red Lobster, they're like, sorry, you got to go through the ropes. You got to be a busser. You got to be a host. So I did that. But as a host, I don't think you got tipped out. You don't. I don't think we did. No tips for the host back then. You did get tipped out when you're a busser. So I was holding on to both jobs, trying to get to a place where I'd be making some tips. So I started junior year working both and it got to be too much. So I had to let Sonic go. So I did. And then I did finally make it to be a server. I think I became a busser and was making tips then, working 4 to 5 nights a week. And
I think of junior year in accounting.
Oh gosh, you're telling me.
Intermediate too. I mean, wow. Well, good for you.
Trying to hold on to that GPA, that, 3-4 and above. I remember I have this like, just very vivid memory of Dr. Weber looking at me and saying, you got to hold a 3-4. And I'm like, okay, I could do it.
Wow. You mentioned earlier you went to Dr. Weber for some help. How did the accounting department help you out, or business school, or what was they? What
did they do? You know, he recommended some attorney help, so that was helpful. You know, I think at GU, I hadn't really told, like, all my friends knew, like, obviously my family life, but I don't think until that point I had kind of really told anybody at GU, like any of my professors or anything. I was very connected with them just because of the nature of GU and the class sizes. Yeah. But I hadn't really, you know, it just wasn't as necessary as it was during, you know, high school when you're in the thick of it and, you know, not an adult, right? Whereas once I was at GU, I was an adult. I was able to make all my own decisions without any problems. So I don't really think most of my professors really knew any of this about me until later, until it was basically my grad school year. Because my stepdad passed away in 2012. Okay. It would have been grad school year that I really kind of reached out to Dr. Weber and asked for this help and just kind of told him my story. And I think, you know, his original reaction was like, why didn't you tell me this sooner? And I was just like, well, it didn't really play a role in my GU, you know, experience as much as it had, you know, leading up to that point. There were definitely times during GU where it was like, I was in the thick of some of the family stuff that was very non-traditional. But it never really impacted me in the way that it did through my high school career. So.
Yeah. And I guess you're somewhat removed maybe. And I don't want to put words into your mouth, but, I guess you're at least you're not at home, right?
You're not at home and you know, you're not really expecting your family to play that big of a role in your college. Right. It's just a lot different. And I was just so, honestly, like getting to that point, I was just so happy to be at that point because I was my own person and I didn't have to be defined by that any longer. You know, I had made my path and I had chosen my way and I got to go for it. And I don't really shy away from telling my story. Like, you know, all my friends know, you know, all the gamut of all the things and they were, you know, around for a lot of it. And, you know, they know all the things, but, again, I just love that it doesn't have to define me anymore. And I think that's really, you know, cool about my story is that it doesn't matter where you come from. I mean, we all have the same opportunities as long as you're willing to work for it and you're, you know, looking for the role models that are going to be there to support you. And that's really what I did. Unfortunately, like I was telling you in the beginning, you know, that's not true for everyone. People, you know, still many people that I know are still just stuck on the hamster wheel. And I hope one day that I can be, you know, the small part of someone's story that, you know, I could lift them up and show them that there is a way out. And there is, you know, people that are going to be there to support you through it.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. And I can't imagine. Wow. I mean, you're in college and basically you got to find somebody to help raise your brother or your stepbrother.
So he was 16 or 17, 17. So he was still in high school trying. And so my thing was, I'm pretty much like when things go awry, I'm like, I go into survival mode. I'm like, okay, what's next? What do I do? So yeah, Dr. Weber, I talked with him and I was, you know, I wasn't living on campus anymore. I was living in a house with some friends. So I had, you know, two roommates. And I was like, hey, do you guys, can I move my brother in here? Which was obviously kind of crazy and non-traditional for other GU students to be asked that. But one of them was an accounting major, Carly McPherson. So she was one of my roommates, senior in grad school year. And she was like, yeah, if that's what you got to do. So we had an open room that he moved into. It didn't go that great. just given, you know, we're talking about a 17-year-old boy who's kind of doing what he wants, trying to go to school, but not really. And I'm over here trying to go to college, working full time and wanting him to just get his life in order. And so it ended up being a short time. I got him a job at Red Lobster too. So he was working with me at Red Lobster too.
Awesome.
And then, you know, things weren't working out and we decided to go our separate ways a little bit after that. And I think he had moved in with my stepdad's girlfriend from that time and just kind of got back into the hamster wheel, I feel like.
Oh, shoot.
And, you know, I'm a big believer that you can't make someone do something, right? So if they don't want it, they don't want it. And so I obviously really wanted my brother to follow me on this path of, you know, a new life, but he didn't want that. And, he made that pretty clear. So, he lives in Spokane and, I see him sometimes, not as often as I used to. But yeah, we're definitely living completely different lives, I would say, these days.
Yeah. Sorry about that. And a shout out to Carly McPherson, who she has, I'll probably butcher her Greek last name now, Kotsovolos. She was my graduate assistant, which actually, you know, Cheyenne, every time I see you, I always view you as coming through Gonzaga before I was here. But I think we did cross over. You never had me in class.
I didn't.
That was your other big lucky. That was your other big lucky break, I think.
No. Right, I did. You were my Vita. I did Vita, and you were my. That was my only experience with you. Was you giving us the rundown of individual taxation for
just partying? Yeah. Dr. Weber built that Vita program, and it was a heavy lift that weekend for, I think, everybody. But a cool program. So, well, very cool. So then, okay, you get your grad degree and then you stick around in Spokane. You're off to Moss Adams, I believe, right?
Yeah. So I got my grad degree and I'm off to Moss Adams, you know, and that's actually even funnier because I tried to leave Spokane. I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to start fresh. I got to do something different. And, you know, Moss Adams in Spokane said, no way, you can't. And I was like, are you sure? Like, I just really feel like I need to get out of here. I didn't leave for college like I probably should have. And they were like, we'll pay you the same amount to stay in Spokane, maybe more. I'm like, okay. I mean, that makes sense. You know, I was trying to go to Portland, which is obviously cost of living was a lot more. Barrier to entry for me was going to be a lot more. Just trying to, you know, get my life started there. And I really loved the people in the Spokane office. I mean, they're a great group. So I was like, okay. So they were like, if you intern in Spokane, like that's where your full-time offer will be. That's where your full-time offer will be for. So, you know, you got to make that decision. But they said, you know, I could always not take the internship and then apply to be in the Portland office if that was what I wanted in the future as well. So of course I took my internship in Spokane. It was awesome. Loved it. I loved the group, loved, you know, it's basically like you're a college freshman again. You're starting all over, but you're going to the big leagues. So, started my internship, did a couple different clients during the summer. I was a summer intern and audit. So that's the, I would say the fun internship, right? You're not working during the middle of tax season. So you're working through the summer, working on some benefit plan audits and some smaller client stuff. And then I came back for the grad year and I did end up getting that full-time offer. So I started full-time in September of 2013. I only actually did a shorter stint than I would have expected, just given how much I loved working there. I ended up meeting my husband pretty shortly after that. So obviously he was not my husband then. And he had a son that was one at the time. And so I was working at Moss Adams and I was traveling a ton, which I don't think is really common anymore, just given, you know, 2020 and the leaps and bounds that have been made with this right here, Zooms and Teams. But I was working 90 nights a year on the road and I don't know if you could tell, but from this, I'm a pretty like friend-centered people person. And so I was missing just the community of being at home with my people. And then also I was missing out on seeing my husband's son. He was transitioning, changing by the day. And I was missing a lot of that. So after about, I was only there, I was there for 2.5 years. So I ended up jumping ship. So it was a hard decision too, because when I left, you know, I talked with Greg Amon, the managing partner then, and he was just like, well, the door is always open here if you want to come back. And I was in tears because I didn't really want to leave, because I really did love working there. And I loved the community of it. But of course, it was really just the travel that I wasn't jiving with. So I jumped ship and I went to Vista. Okay. So this is actually the funniest part of the story, because, you know, Vista seemed like it was going to be it, right? It was like, okay, another great company with this great community, mission, all the things. And so it seemed like it fit me so well, just given where I was going. And so I arrived there and I took a job in internal audit, which that was probably where I really messed up. Let's be honest. That's really not my personality. But yeah, I took a job in internal audit, and the team was awesome, but it wasn't me. It was just not that, you know, you're mostly doing work all alone in your cubicle. And it just felt like it was too quiet. I'm a pretty loud and I like to have fun. And it just seemed too quiet when I came to work, I think. So I was only there for 4 months. And then I had been offered an opportunity to be a controller for a mining and drilling company out in the valley here, which was way out of my league. You know, they didn't have a controller, so they were kind of, they needed someone immediately, and they were, and I had interned there for a short period too, during a small stint. I'm trying to remember when that was. It must have been a break in one of, when I, that was at Post Red Lobster. So I actually worked at David's Pizza too. So you brought that up.
Ah.
I worked at David's Pizza on the South Hill for a short time too.
Okay.
So, and then I think it was during the time. So I was an intern out here, and then I went from there to David's Pizza before starting full time at Moss Adams.
Interesting. And Mark, the owner, I don't know his last name, but he's every time I've had interact with him, he's been fabulous. So
he's wonderful. Great leader, one of the hardest working people I've ever met, for sure.
Mark Starr. That's right. Yeah. Growing up in Spokane, I was involved with YMCA Camp Reed. I was a counselor there eventually, very fortunate to get that. And Mark's always been a big supporter of a lot of community things. I didn't realize they were up on the South Hill. That must have been when they transitioned from being on the active campus to where they're at now. Did he take the truck up there, or was there an actual physical location?
So he joined forces with Famous Ed's.
That's right.
Yeah. So he, and that was, you know, intermittent between that, where he's at now.
Gotcha. That's right. Okay. That's deep south too.
Yeah. Boy, deep south. And so, and I had moved up there post-college. I had moved up there with one of my best friends from high school into an apartment. So that was what kind of, I was like, yeah, Red Lobster's pretty far, which, you know, in Spokane, pretty far is not that far. But for me, I'm like, well, I could just be working up the hill until I started Moss Adams. So I'm going to take that. And I had another friend from high school who actually used to work with me at Sonic, who was also up there. So it was kind of like, sure, why not? So yeah, I worked up there. But yeah, so back to the internship that turned into a full-time job as a controller. That really set the stage for my career moving into private, right? So internal audit was still felt very much in the audit world. And then when I took the job as a controller, it was like, boom, welcome to private and all the filings that go with being in private and all the internal bookkeeping stuff that you didn't know about before that you only audited. Now you need to know about it. So I got acclimated real fast with all that stuff, because, you know, like I said, they didn't have a controller when I started there. So I was picking up the pieces from a controller that had been gone for quite a while. I think he had been gone for about 9 months. So I was picking up pieces, trying to figure out what to do. And that business was growing so much at that time that the CFO, which is who I reported to, was busy traveling out and about all the time, you know, working on the growth side of the business. So I was in the thick of it, trying to figure it all out. And I learned a lot real quick. So that was what was really great about that experience, because I had to. I had to get some stuff done. And then I got to see the other side of an audit. So I was, or a review. It was a review. So there, they had a review there. So I was, you know, on that side of the audit world. And then I decided that I needed something different. So I was still working there and I was trying to think about if I was going to go back and go into finance. So like you mentioned before, I was like, is that more my personality? You know, after internal audit didn't work and, you know, Vista, where I thought was like going to be, you know, potentially the career ender, right? Go to a Vista and that's where people spend the rest of their careers. So then I was like, okay, maybe I messed this all up and I'm questioning my whole life in September of 2017. And I'm like, okay, what do I do now? So I decided, maybe I'm just going to quit. Which was very uncommon for me to even think about making a weird decision like that. That's not very safe. But I just wasn't sure. And so I didn't end up quitting. I ended up taking just like a, I told them that I would work for them, but I just wanted to do it, you know, just until they found someone. And then I was going to go off on a journey to find something different. So then the story comes that in October, one of my friends from high school, also someone that worked at Sonic with me, she's getting married. And so I show up and I'm with her. We're driving out to get some glasses that she had made for the bridesmaids and groomsmen group. And right before we get the glasses, I meet everyone, and then we leave and we get in the car and she's like, oh yeah, he's like the controller for the Kohl's company or something. And I'm like, Alex, I'm like, the controller for the Kohl's company. I'm like, that's the largest private company. Like, what? Why wouldn't you tell me that before we go in there? And so we start driving home and, you know, I start Googling. No, he's not the controller. He's the CFO of, you know, Kohl's company. And I just met him in his pajamas. So that's always the funniest part about when I talk to Steve. I'm like, yeah, I remember that day I met you in your pajamas, like just came to your house to pick up some stuff. So I'm laughing and I'm not thinking really much of it. And then I think like 3 weeks later, they post a position here at Kohl's company and they're looking for an assistant corporate controller.
And this was Steve Rector.
Yes. Steve Rector.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Who's been there. Good. Go on. Yeah.
So 3 weeks later, I see that Kohl's company is looking for an assistant corporate controller. And I call Alex and I'm like, Alex, you gotta be kidding me right now. Like now they're looking for someone that's literally the skill set that I have, like, and like really the timing is perfect. So I'm like, hey, can you reach out to him? You know, she knows. So his daughter was actually in her wedding with me too. So she's like, yeah, let me reach out and see if you can just send your stuff directly to him. So she did. And, you know, Steve emailed me and he was like, yeah, here's this. But of course, you know, you got to go through the HR channels, all the things. So I do, I apply, I'm going up against some people from Moss Adams that I know. And, you know, I'm all in, but I'm not really sure. And so I end up getting the position. And here I am today. So I've been here for seven years.
Wow. Tom Brassage was probably there at that point.
Started right after I did.
He started after you. Okay.
Yeah. So he started as our print media controller, in January of 2018.
Gotcha. You know, it is such a great company, particularly because it's so invested in the community. Can you talk a little bit about the company, what it does? I mean, I think people know it as the paper, right?
Yeah, I mean, but some people don't even know it, especially the younger generation. You know, I tell people I work for Kohl's Company and they think I work for a department store. So
right. Yeah.
And I'll say that, you know, my career now, it's like when you look back, it's just so funny because again, it meets all the metrics for me, right? It's a family-owned company. It's a very tight-knit group that I work under / with. And what they do in Spokane, there's just so much. And so the breadth of what I see these days is just so wide than it, when compared to if I was just a controller at one company. We own the print media company. So we, you know, the biggest one, like you mentioned, the Spokesman Review, Journal of Business, Nicholsworth Publication, So we own all those. We also own, we have a broadcasting division. So we own KHQ here in Spokane, the local broadcasting company. And we also own CMM. So that's our Montana station. We own a ton of real estate here. So we're known for that, right? We own River Park Square. We own the building next door. That's the M building. So we participate a lot in the downtown commerce. I think it's
yeah.
a big part of it. And then we also do one of my favorite things to have seen since I've been here, which has grown a ton since I've been here, is really the investment side. So we have, we call it internally the growth fund. But what they call it now officially is Kohl's Ventures. So it's basically a fund where we're investing in local startups, and we have a team. So my old boss, pre-Tom, Sky, so he's kind of the investment manager, and he is plays a big part in the entrepreneurial community here in Spokane, and works with all the new startup companies. So I get to see a lot of what's going on in that. In that area of, you know, the Spokane business. And that has been just so interesting. And, you know, I just really don't know where else I would get to see all of those things. Right. I just named like, and I actually didn't even name one of the biggest, biggest companies. It's our paper manufacturing company, which is Inland Empire Paper.
Yeah.
So they provide the newsprint for the newspaper.
And you forgot the most important endeavor. It's relatively new, is the pickleball courts across the
street. Oh yeah, well that's under the real estate group.
the new pickleball courts, which are absolutely phenomenal in an interesting way, right? And it's the old printing facility that they've converted to an indoor pickleball court club of sorts. So that's incredible. Yeah, and I quite a few zags over there and good people all around it at Kohl's. So, Cheyenne, you've had an incredible journey and it continues. I know that. And I mean, I've known you for a little bit here and hearing your story now in person, and I've obviously read about it in that Spokesman article, but, a person of incredible character. And, I think I mentioned perseverance before too, but I think character is probably the more apt word to describe you.
Thank you.
When you look at Gonzaga students that are getting ready to head off and embark on their career, and you know, there's a variety. I mean, there's maybe not so many students with kind of the background that you had, you know, maybe more people that were kind of like me, lucky, you know, grew up pretty middle class, pretty safe and secure. Didn't have a whole lot of challenges. I did have a brother pass away, which was a challenge, and I suppose everybody has their own. But what advice do you give to the newly minted Gonzaga graduates?
You know, I think you can tell through the whole story, right? It's really that you got to find your people, and the people that are, you know, in like somewhat similar situations, obviously not going to be completely similar, but if you're feeling like, you know, you could use some support, just look for it. I felt that way so many times, and everywhere, which way or way I would turn, people would be there to support me. And also surround yourself with people that you want to be like. I hope that my kids are the middle class that are, you know, don't have this story, right? That's the goal. And, you know, we have three kids now, and I think that my story allows that, you know, they'll know, I think they're going to want to work hard, and I think they're going to, you know, be great people, but I also don't want them to have to experience what I experienced to get there. And I think also that it's just great that they're going to have the whole support system that I have gained through all of my experience to support them too. And while that's not, you know, your typical family unit, it might be even better, right? Cause I just have so many people that are backing me and supporting me in all these endeavors, and I couldn't do it without them. So I would say that if I can do it, anyone can do it. You just have to work for it. You have to want it and you have to work for it. And I think that I did that. And I think that where I'm at now really shows that, that those things can happen. And I'm very blessed and I have a lot of gratitude. That's one thing I will say too, is that I have not taken anything for granted. I'm so grateful for all the support. And I think, I hope that that shows through my story and that I tell to anyone that I know I wouldn't be here without all of the help and support from my teachers, my mentors, my coworkers, my managers, my friends and their families. And I just am forever grateful for all of them. And I think it just shows that if you find your people, they will support you and you can do anything that you set your mind to.
It's a refreshing story of hope and humanity, particularly at a time when, you know, politics are so intense. And I had a friend that was a Hoopfest court monitor last month.
Okay. And
I saw him, he's getting a beer at the end of the first day. He looked at me and he's like, I've lost all hope in humanity. Right. So your story, Cheyenne, is the exact opposite, right? People can be awesome. So
people can be awesome. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate your time. I want to be respectful of it. We're just about at an hour. So look forward to seeing you sometime here in the near future. And thank you so much for hanging out today.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Cheers.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. It was edited by yours truly, Margie Allgaard. Go forth and set the world on fire, and go Zags.